She's going to show us why New Yorkers very rarely dump an incumbent governor. I think she's not in nearly as much trouble as some insiders seem to believe.
Hi there, it's WAMC News Director Ian Pickus, and on this episode of the WAMC News Podcast, we look back on John Lindsay's time as mayor and forward to a very busy political year in New York. As we get ready for another legislative session in Albany and an unusual mayoral election in New York City in 2025, longtime political reporter and observer Errol Lewis is taking a deep dive into another troubled era.
I'm John Lindsay. I was born in New York City and I've lived here all my life. And I'm running for mayor because I know that our city is in a crisis.
In a three-part podcast series, the host of You Decide explores the highs and lows of Lindsay's time in office. Lewis is Spectrum News New York One's political anchor and hosts Inside City Hall. Errol, welcome back.
Always great to be with you, Ian.
So what got you interested in looking at the time in office of John Lindsay?
Well, you know, some of his alumni, some of the, at the time, young people who had worked for him are now senior members with important positions in government and industry and philanthropy, and some of them had reached out. They're a very interesting and in some ways tight-knit group who were really intrigued by the idea that they were coming up on the 60-year anniversary of the election of John Lindsay as mayor, and they wanted somebody to know about it and to think about it. And I talked about it with my producer, Anthony Roman, and we started looking at it, and we started to realize that there's a lot of things that we take for granted, not just in New York City, but even beyond, that were all originated with the Lindsay administration. So we figured, you know what, let's take a look at it. And it's actually ended up being a really interesting backdrop for the mayoral election that we're heading into in 2025.
Now, your series notes the coaching tree that Lindsay left. And, you know, there are people who are successful from, a variety of different spots on the political spectrum. So he, of course, famously changed parties. What do we know about what his politics were?
Well, it's interesting. It's almost an extinct species, but he was a liberal Republican. They did exist, and he wasn't the only one. he was mayor at the same time as there was another liberal Republican, Nelson Rockefeller, who was the governor, and it was Jacob Javits, who was the senator, or the senior senator in New York, and he was a Republican. And these were folks who had, fiscal conservatism of a certain kind, but they also were very interested in moving forward on things like civil rights and economic fairness and building on inclusion and so forth. We don't associate that with the Republican Party, but the Lindsay Republicans really were very active at the time.
Now, he confronted a number of crises as mayor, including on his first day. Can you take us through some of them?
Oh, sure. Right. There's a 12-day transit strike. It shuts down all city trains and buses on Lindsay's very first day as mayor. In fact, he doesn't get to some of his inaugural festivities because he can't get there. There's a transit strike that has shut down the city. There was the teacher strike in Ocean Hill, Brownsville. It closed 57 schools. There was a 9-day sanitation strike that left 100,000 tons of uncollected trash on the streets of New York City. There's something called the Hard Hat Riot that some of your listeners may know about, where construction workers clashed with anti-war protesters and they almost took over City Hall, on and on and on. The Stonewall riots that are seen as a turning point and an important historical moment that launched the modern gay LGBT rights movement. Well, they were battling with Lindsay's cops. All of that was happening in New York City at more or less the same time.
When I was listening to this, I was thinking about the fact that a lot of political legacies are defined by kind of what happens in the era. And sometimes it's because of a policy that's pursued by an elected official, but other times it's just circumstance and how they react to it. A famous example would be Rudy Giuliani in 9/11, and we know how things have turned out with him. But for a time, his approach to that day really help cement his legacy. So when I was thinking about this turbulent time in American history, how much of that was, you know, just coincidence with Lindsay's term versus an agenda that he was pursuing?
Well, it's an interesting question you raise. I mean, why is he the man for the moment? And did he rise to the occasion? And how much of it is, luck, and how much of it is circumstance? Well, look, this was a very turbulent time, as you say. Martin Luther King is assassinated in 1968, and so is Robert F. Kennedy, who is the junior senator from New York State. I mean, this is not something you can overlook, right? It didn't just spark riots and heartbreak and turbulence all over the country, but again, this is our own senator, and so yeah, Lindsay is right in the thick of it, and never shied away from any of it, And so we took a look at a couple of different things. We looked at how he handled things like those assassinations, where he walked the streets and prevented New York from going down the road of so many other cities and having riots. But we also looked at some of his achievements, things that he sort of did proactively that we take for granted, like the 911 system, the emergency response system that almost every major city has now. Well, the first one was in New York City. It was one of the things that he promised on the campaign trail. It was one of the things he delivered. The fact that we have air conditioning on subway cars, that was something that, another kind of Lindsay innovation, and on and on and on. He did quite a lot. And inside the guts of government, he did some reorganizations that, again, we take for granted now, but he really made quite a mark. And so between the things that happened to the city and the country and the world that he had to respond to and the things that he proactively did, it really was just a fascinating time in city government.
No, it raises the question, and you mentioned earlier that the type of Republican he was is basically gone. But do we think that a Republican could be elected mayor of New York City again?
Oh, sure. I mean, look, we're not quite past the era when there were 20 consecutive years of Republican mayors, right? I mean, Rudy Giuliani had two terms, and he was followed by Mike Bloomberg, who had three. Far from out of the question. The issue tends to be whether or not the Republican Party is going to field a decent candidate and really try and compete in a serious way. And there are a lot of reasons why they put that off. I mean, look, frankly, a lot of their talent has gone to Washington. A lot of them are, heading for the Trump administration even now. A lot of the potential candidates. There's also this kind of split between what the National Republican Party stands for and has found electoral success with and what sells in New York City. There's a very particular kind. I mean, like, to give you an example, the two Republican mayors I'm talking to you about, the Rudy Giuliani administration followed by the Bloomberg administration, they were both in favor of gay marriage. That's not part of the National Republican apparatus or platform or whatever you want to call it. So you get a very different set of political problems here if you're going to run under the Republican label. And that has really hurt a lot of candidates in the post-Bloomberg era.
So this is our first time talking since the election of November. And, as you say, Republicans really did make some inroads, especially in key pockets of New York City and the downstate suburbs. So what's your read on all of that? I mean, was this just sort of dissatisfaction with the Democratic side, or is the Trump wing of the Republican Party more popular than we may have thought in New York?
They're more popular than we may have thought, or to put it another way, if Democrats don't get their act together, voters will start to drift away. Voters who normally would vote Democratic will, or even are registered as Democrats, will start looking elsewhere. That's just a given. That's basic to politics. I think some of the Republican gains in New York, and in particular in New York City, are probably overstated. I mean, if you're, if you lose by, 3-1 instead of 5-1, yes, I guess you've made some progress, but you still lost. I mean, that's, there's no particular danger. I mean, look, all of the statewide positions in New York are held by Democrats, and nobody thinks that's going to change anytime soon. All of the citywide positions in New York City are held by Democrats, and nobody thinks that's going to change anytime soon. There's not just a majority, but a supermajority of progressive Democrats in the New York City Council, and nobody thinks that's going to change anytime soon. So, oh, look, there's lots of possibilities if the Republican Party really plays their cards right, if they decide that they want to build on these inroads, these possibilities that the November election suggests are out there. They can do something, but I think they're going to have to do some planning around it and maybe have like a, I don't know, a 2 to 3 cycle plan, a 5 to 10 year plan to try and make some inroads in New York City.
So at this stage, it's fair to say at this point, you know, you're not a Mike Lawler believer yet.
Well, I believe he's going to run. I'll tell you that. I know that guy. He was a political consultant before he went into politics, before he became a candidate, I should say. And, you know, he was on my show quite frequently, and he's a very, very smart guy. And in an election where he and a bunch of other suburban Republican incumbents were targeted, three of them lost and Mike Lawler won, and he won pretty decisively. And, you know, I think the very next day, or certainly within a week, he was attacking Governor Hochul, who apparently he is clearly going to run against in 2026.
So if you were advising Governor Hochul, and we're speaking on the eve of her, you know, state of the state address and a very important legislative session, would you turn on the sirens at this point? I mean, how much trouble is she in your view?
I don't think she's in as much trouble as a lot of other insiders. You know, I'm not a prognosticator, but when I hear some insiders talk about her as, you know, just, you know, on her last legs and might not be able to win a Democratic primary and so forth, I remind them, it's like, look, she's been in something like 15 elections. And I think, you know, at the local level, very local level, you know, from her town in Western New York to the Erie County clerk to Congress to lieutenant governor and now governor. She's won state, local, and federal races. I think she's lost one. If she's 14-1, and after, you know, whatever, 200-plus years of history, she's the only woman to ever get elected, I'd say, look, she's got some political skills. I wouldn't count her out by any means. And I think she's going to show us this year, or 2025, she's going to show us why New Yorkers very rarely dump an incumbent governor. I think she's not in nearly as much trouble as some insiders seem to believe.
So is this just, you know, people who have their own ambition pointing to the governor's weak polling to raise their own profile, but you think Democrats will eventually get in line with her?
Well, no, I think there are some ambitious people out there, including her own lieutenant governor, by the way, Antonio Delgado,
right,
and Richie Torres and some other people who have been kind of going after her. Andrew Cuomo is, of course, waiting in the wings, clearly wants his old job back. I think they look at her polling numbers, where they're not spectacular. She's, you know, there's a crankiness in the electorate. And when incumbents encounter crankiness, they often will get voted out just because people feel like there needs to be a change. So, you know, there's some reason to sort of look at her and say, okay, well, you know, there's some people who want to maybe test her a little bit. I think that she's going to meet the test. You know, I mean, that's all.
What about the race for New York City mayor? You know, Eric Adams is kind of one of a kind, and he's been playing nice with President-elect Trump because he has his own legal troubles, of course, and there are a lot of other candidates who are going to run for mayor where there's now ranked choice voting. So as we prepare to really get into this race full time, how does the field look to you?
Well, the field itself is probably the best thing that Eric Adams has going for him. You know, there's a stature gap here. You know, these are not the candidates who have declared so far and are lining up. It includes some people who have never run outside of a very small district, like a state Senate district. Therefore, their name recognition is not all that high. It includes some people who have never run for office before. And it includes some people who are on the progressive side of things, which is not necessarily in favor in New York these days, at least as far as, you know, a commanding majority of the citywide vote. So Eric Adams has all of the advantages, or many of the advantages, that incumbents normally have. He definitely has some legal problems. And frankly, he was polling down around in the low 20% range before he got arrested and indicted. So he's got huge political problems. But again, the best thing he has going for him is that he's running against people who are not nearly as well known, who haven't yet raised the money. They seem, some of them seem to be doing pretty well with their fundraising, according to the first filing. And then some of them have their own, you know, sort of political issues. Scott Stringer, who's one of the candidates running, was a candidate 4 years ago, and he dropped out when there were a lot of allegations about past misconduct. And he's been tangled up in court with a woman who accused him of sexual misconduct. This is a very difficult way to start off a campaign. And so he's got problems. There are others who are, like I said, lesser known. We're at the start of what is going to be a 26-week sprint to June 24th. That's when the primary is being held. And nobody looks particularly strong, including the incumbent mayor.
Let me wrap up by putting a question to you that I've been asking a lot of people since Election Day. You know, Chuck Schumer waited his whole life to become majority leader of the Senate, and that's ending. Hakeem Jeffries will not be the House Speaker. Does New York lose anything in terms of clout in the new reality in Washington with unified Republican control and the return of Trump?
Well, I mean, look, you get 24 months of unified control, which, if patterns hold, past patterns hold, including the pattern of the first Trump administration, that will change in 24 months. And believe me, Hakeem Jeffries has his calendar out and is marking every day until the 2026 elections, when, if patterns hold, Republicans will lose control of one or both houses of Congress, most likely the lower house. I don't know if New Yorkers lose anything in particular. In fact, there's an argument that we might gain something, because the state and local tax deduction that so many suburban communities have felt the sting of. If I remember correctly, I believe Donald Trump said he was going to let it lapse.
That's
and
true.
It is scheduled to sunset this year. And so that's pretty good. There's a possibility that, you know, given the agencies, you know, things like we have our former congressman who's going to be in the administration, Lee Zeldin, New York might get some regard and respect. And then I guess, you know, finally, and this is, you know, this is speculation, but Donald Trump himself could use a pardon. I mean, he has been convicted in a New York court, and the only person who can give him a pardon, he can't pardon himself, would be the governor of New York, Kathy Hochul. So there's some possibilities there. I tend to be an optimist, you know, and I could be proven wrong. We may be talking and having a very different conversation a year from now. But I don't know if New York is going to get targeted, and I don't know if New York is going to be particularly harmed. You know, the immigration question, of course, is going to be where a lot of that gets hashed out. But there, too, I don't think New York is necessarily going to get hurt all that badly.
Errol Lewis is Spectrum News, New York One's political anchor and the host of Inside City Hall. And we've been speaking about his deep dive into the mayoralty of the former New York City Republican mayor, John Lindsay, which is covered on his podcast. Errol, it's always a pleasure to catch up with you. And let's talk a lot sooner than a year from now. OK,
absolutely. And Happy New Year to you, Ian.
OK, that does it for this episode of the WAMC News Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. Until next time, I'm Ian Pickus.